Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon?, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and you're listening to another episode of Who's Reading the Organon?
Hi, I'm Vera Resnick, classical homeopath, and you are listening to another episode of Who's Reading the Organon? Today we're going to be working on aphorism 249 and the footnotes.
Great.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I'm reading from Berica, and Debbie, you're reading from?
I'm reading from O'Reilly.
Okay, terrific. And we're in the sixth edition of the Organon. 249. Every medicine prescribed for a case of disease, which, in the course of its action, produces new and troublesome symptoms not appertaining to the disease to be cured, is not capable of effecting real improvement and cannot be considered as homeopathically selected. Okay, this one opens a whole can of worms. What does homeopathically selected refer to? We talked about this in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's referring us to the footnote. So there are a few things that are necessary to be considered to be homeopathic. Right.
Well, the main thing that's necessary to be homeopathic is that a medicine that is homeopathically selected will create an artificial disease that is similar to the natural disease. So if we've understood the natural disease properly, so for example, if you have a runny nose and your eyes are stinging and your eyes are also running and this is something mm-hmm. that onions cause, then choosing Allium Cepha would be homeopathic to your case. But the proof of the pudding, if something is homeopathic to the case, sorry, proof of the pudding is a very English expression. I hope it won't trouble any of the listeners. But the
it uses the word proof.
But the proof is with any case, really, if we gave a remedy that's truly homeopathic to the case, then it will cure. So if this person comes with their runny nose and burning eyes and we give Allium Cepha and they feel better, then we've given a remedy that's homeopathic to the case. So if we take that logic and reverse it and say, if we gave a remedy and it did not cure, then it's not homeopathic to the case.
Then it's not the proof of the pudding. So the result actually tells you whether or not it was well selected.
That's right. If it's not a good fit, it won't do what we want it to do. And Hahnemann is giving an example here of if it not only it's not helping, it produces new and troublesome symptoms that have nothing to do with the case to be cured. So you've got your runny nose and your eyes stinging and you take your Allium Cepha. And then, trying to think of Allium Cepha symptoms, your runny nose blocks off and starts running only from one nostril, let's say. That might be an example.
Odd.
Or all of a sudden,
I don't know, do they break out in a rash?
Could be. Something happens that has nothing to do with the original disease. So it looks like the Allium Cepha is not really taking us someplace. Let's carry on with the text, and then we'll go down to the footnote. Let's get to the end of Hahnemann's thought. The remedy must, therefore, either, if the aggravation be considerable, be first partially neutralized as soon as possible by an antidote, before giving the next remedy chosen more accurately according to similarity of action, or If the troublesome symptoms be not very violent, the next remedy must be given immediately in order to take the place of the improperly selected one. So we have a situation and we have two choices. Situation, I gave a remedy, it's not helping, and it's producing new and troublesome symptoms. It's not like we gave a remedy and the person is saying, you know, every now and then my nose twitches a little. We've got some troublesome symptom. Person is saying they can't sleep, or they're saying they get headaches, or they're getting something that's troubling them. And we have two options. One is to antidote and then give a better remedy. And the second option, if the troublesome symptom is not very violent, like let's say the person says, I get mild headaches. I didn't get them before. The headaches are very mild. I can still do everything. I live my life. In those cases, we can straight away look for a better remedy.
Right. It's not so urgent. And another point that comes up, which flows from the previous aphorism, is the consideration of the word new symptom. What I don't know whether this is an indication of asking the patient whether this is a symptom they have had before.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a symptom that comes up from the past, then it's not exactly a new symptom because they're familiar with it. So does that come into play with this aphorism?
For sure. We need the symptoms are described as new and troublesome. So there's two elements to
it. So that means the person would definitely recognize that it's something that's whether difficult for them to bear, irritating, making it difficult for them to function. One, something that they're going to call you, hopefully they're going to call you and say, look, I took it and now I have this, so what do I do? And that's where Hahnemann is answering the question,
mm-hmm.
that it's something violent or something not so bad.
Sometimes what happens, though, it's a little complicated because sometimes when a patient produces a new and troublesome symptom that they never had before, first of all, the fact that they're producing it means they're capable of producing it, which means they have some kind of susceptibility around that symptom. It's very difficult, especially with this kind of method where the dosing is so gentle, it's difficult to kind of force a medicinal symptom on a patient.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the confusion is, are we going to include this new symptom, the new and troublesome symptom, in determining the new remedy we're going to give? Or are we going to say, no, no, this symptom is totally irrelevant to the case, and we're just going to antidote the remedy and then choose something else?
This is really a great point to talk about because I did recently have a case where I gave Thuja. And then the person had an injury. And she had been having injuries all along, susceptibility to bumping or whatever. And she then asked, could the remedy have brought this on? And I was wondering, well, really, that's, I didn't think it could. I thought this was part of her general situation, chronic situation, over the lifetime, and I had to include it. So that's a really a good question. I don't know where you sit with that.
I think it's something that will vary from case to case. And I think part of what we need to look at also is the level of general improvement in the case. Because if, for example, I've given a remedy and my patient is starting to get headaches, he came because he couldn't sleep and because he was having nightmares. In general, he tells me the remedy has helped him. He no longer gets nightmares. He feels good. His vitality is good. His sleep is excellent, but he's getting headaches. So here, the whole thing becomes much more questionable to my mind. I'm not quite sure. Am I antidoting? Am I not antidoting?
Okay. So how do we discover the answer to that?
I think that we do need to look at the general improvement, and I do think that possibly in the type of case that I described, obviously taken individually, the type of case I described, I would want to change the potency, change the way the remedy is being given, possibly give them the remedy less frequently and see if the headaches go away. I think also there's an element of transience. Very often, if an aggravation is something that's just like a side symptom, David Little refers to side symptoms, that a remedy that's helping might produce something in the vital force which throws off the symptom, which is transient, goes away. So sometimes I think that the possible, the best way to go is simply to hold off, don't repeat, wait a day or two, see what's happening, see if the symptom persists, if it goes away. If it goes away and the person is improving, the vitality, the chief complaint, the general, then I would carry on with the same remedy. On the other hand, if I stop giving the remedy and I see that this new and troublesome symptom is just getting worse or very solidly there,
right,
then I would look for a better remedy.
Right. So timing is of utmost importance.
I think timing and individualization. Because we're looking at the patient's general improvement. We're looking at the improvement of the chief complaint. And we're looking at the transience of the troublesome symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have a look at the footnote and see what it gives us more. Okay?
Okay.
As all experience shows that the dose of the special...
Oh, I just lost you. I have no sound. Do that again.
Okay, as all experience shows that the dose of the specially suited homeopathic medicine can scarcely be prepared too small to effect perceptible amelioration in the disease for which it is appropriate, we should act injudiciously and hurtfully when no improvement or some, though it even be slight, aggravation ensues, to repeat or even increase the dose of the same medicine, as is done in the old system, under the delusion that it was not efficacious on account of its small quantity, its too small dose. Hahnemann, please, all that was one sentence? How are we supposed to understand
that? Can I read it in from O'Reilly?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay. According to all experience, almost no dose of a highly potentized, specifically fitting homeopathic medicine can be prepared so that it is too small to bring forth a distinct improvement in the disease for which it is suited. Therefore, one would be practicing inexpediently and detrimentally, in parentheses, as happens with the hitherto method of treatment, if one wanted to repeat or even increase the dose of the same medicine when there is no improvement or when there is a small aggravation, under the delusion that the medicine was not able to be of service on its account of service on account of its small quantity.
She
says it's all too small dose. Yes. And then every aggravation
Let's try and break down this sentence, because it sounds to me like O'Reilly has caught the long sentence syndrome, and this is all also the way Hahnemann keeps inverting the way he's talking. All experience shows that the dose of the specially suited homeopathic medicine can scarcely be prepared too small to effect perceptible amelioration. So how can we say that in a positive way? He's saying it can never be too small. Okay, so we're basically...
That doesn't sound positive to me.
So
never.
he's basically saying that the smallest amount of a remedy should be able to affect perceptible amelioration, if it's appropriate.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've seen that. I've seen, like, sometimes it looks like a patient needs 30C or 200C. I'm not a high doser, but sometimes it seems a patient should need that. But all the patient has at home is 6E. And they start taking the 6E.
Okay.
So first of all, in terms of potency, even the 6E, you'll see something. But also what Hahnemann is saying here is in terms of the grain that's diluted and further diluted, he's saying no dilution can be too small. He's saying something very heavy here. Even the smallest quantity of a remedy, the smallest amount, smallest grain, should be enough to affect change, positive change, in the disease for which it's appropriate. If it's going to work, it is going to work, no matter how much or how little you put into that bottle. So if I could cut the poppy seed grain in half and put it in, according to this, if it's good for this patient, it will work.
Okay. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. I don't know what it's if it's good, it's going to make an effect. So if a person always feels enlivened by music or the sun or some stimulation, then all they need is a little bit of it, and that should stimulate, be the catalyst for some effect, some improvement.
I know sometimes you have people, for example, who feel much better in sunshine, right? And they could be sitting in a room, and all of a sudden the sun comes out behind a cloud, and one little ray of sunshine finds its way into this person's room. That little ray of sunshine, this is sounding very kitschy, sounds like someone should burst into song now, but that little ray of sunshine...
Yes, this is a musical.
It's part of... Yeah,
it's true.
You see sometimes a person sitting in a chair, sort of a little slumped, and then a ray of sunshine falls on them, and they smile. And every smile is the immune system improving. And that that is something that's very known. So Hahnemann is saying it doesn't matter how large the dose is or how small.
Right.
It could be a tiny dose. If it is going to help, it's going to help.
And some people love their pet. And the dog or the cat or the bird, whatever they have in the house, it either tweets or it comes meows and rubs against them. The little dog is wagging their tail. You know, it's not even a substance. It's just the energy of those two in relationship to each other. And it makes a huge effect. So a change for the better.
Yep.
So we're saying the healing power of what we live with in our life and what we can provide for the patient if we are matching their energy will make this shift.
And we'll be able to see something. And he takes it still further. He says, again, we're going to have to make Hahnemann be a bit more positive here. We should act in, we're still in the footnote, we should act injudiciously and hurtfully, i.e. we are going to be stupid and harmful, were we when no improvement or some, though it be even slight aggravation ensues, to repeat or even increase the dose of the same medicine, as is done in the old system. Let's just stop there and look at that. He's saying, if your patient is not improving, and if he's aggravating, and then you say, well, the remedy wasn't strong enough, let's give more, or even possibly higher potency, although that's debatable. The potency issue is debatable. I'm not sure it's clear from this one. But certainly the size of the dose is relevant here, the quantity of the dose. So he's saying we would be injudicious, which I say is just a euphemism for idiotic, and hurtful if we repeat the remedy when there's no improvement, even a slight improvement, and when on top of that, no improvement, we have aggravation.
Mm-hmm.
Even slight aggravation. So how do we turn this into positive? We've said even a small amount of the remedy will help if it's homeopathic to the case.
Right.
On top of that, if the remedy gives an improvement with no aggravation or an improvement with slight aggravation, it might be relevant to repeat or increase the dose. But if the remedy gives no improvement and some, even a slight aggravation, there he says we must not repeat. He says, every aggravation by the production of new symptoms when nothing untoward has happened in the mental or physical regimen invariably proves unsuitableness on the part of the medicine formerly given in the case of the disease before us, but never indicates that the dose has been too weak. So, we have an aggravation with production of new symptoms. We have no amelioration. And here we have Hanuman gives a very nice rider here. Nothing untoward has happened in the mental or physical regimen. It means the remedy is no good.
And he's telling us on both physical plane and mental plane.
But here's what's interesting, sure. Because I know I've had with a patient that the remedy didn't seem to be helping. It wasn't clear whether there was slight aggravation of old symptoms. There weren't any new symptoms, but the remedy didn't seem to be helping. We went into her entire day to find, did anything untoward occur in the mental or physical? It's one of the investigations that homeopaths have to do, which is part of why I believe that Sherlock Holmes is compulsory reading for every homeopath. And we need to be detectives. In the case of this particular patient, we discovered hand soap. She was having a problem with her hands. And then we realized that she was in the office all day, and she was using office hand soap all day, which was preventing the remedy from working. Now, this isn't production of new symptoms. Oh. This is maintaining cause for the original disease. But the first question that has to come up, if there are new symptoms, and which Hanuman is saying here in this short sentence, the first question that has to come up is, has anything changed? Even before, like I know if I give a remedy and someone calls and says, you know, it doesn't feel like it's helping and I got a rash and I never have rashes. And my first reaction is, oh my gosh, the remedy gave him a rash, terrible remedy. I have to antidote. I have to give a better remedy. I have to go back to work here. And that's not quite so the first reaction has to be. Did you get any vaccinations? Did you take any medications? Did you take any supplements? Did you go any place you've never been before? Did you start a heating system you've never used before? Did you?
Right. So also, you're saying check through the person's day if there was something that was changed in what they normally do or whether they were repeating something that might have caused the remedy to aggravate or not work. And then I usually ask, have you ever had this before? Because I like to check whether it is actually something new or it is something that has come up from the past. And there are a couple of questions that you want to check with. Also, they may say that this is a bad aggravation or there's something new here. And I also like to find out what good things changed, because maybe something else happened for them that they were not focusing on, but they didn't realize was going away.
That's so true.
So that's enough. And then once they get into it and they say, oh, yeah. And then I say, well, let's take a closer look at this, that I don't want to be hasty in what we do next. I give it that wait and see, which is what you repeated before.
But it's so true in asking, right? When you say to ask, have you ever had this before? Because I find that that's one of the questions which would seem to be obvious, but it's a question that needs often repetition, especially in older patients. When you ask, have you ever had this symptom before? And they say, no, I've never had it. And sometimes it seems the best response to that is silence and waiting. And within 2 minutes, they say, actually, you know, 30 years ago, I had a symptom of something like this, and they go on to describe exactly what they're going through. And I think in those cases, very often what will happen is that the symptom will be transient, unless it was a symptom of something that was suppressed at that time, suppressed with cortisone, suppressed with, and then sometimes this is just the next part of the picture that we're going to have to work with.
I like what you said about that silence, because today so many homeopaths are doing phone consultations. And we have a tendency not to want any time lapse in between our conversation. However, I recently had a call with someone, and the person stopped talking, and I didn't say anything for at least a full minute. And a full minute is a long time on a phone. And she then asked me, "Are you still there?" And I said, "Yes, I'm listening." Then she paused again and came up with new information. So it gives the client time to get into their own thoughts, to recover whatever important unconscious information needs to be transferred or transmitted to you. And I think this is a good thing. While we're on the radio show, we don't want to leave any dead air space. But when you're doing a consultation, you do need that space to let information flow.
I think it's very true. I think that we do tend to try and rush in. And the trouble is, as homeopaths, every time we rush in and don't wait for the patient, we often produce our own idea and then run the risk of suggesting our own idea to the patient. And then we muddy up our own case. I'd just like to refer, we have like a couple of minutes left, something like that, right, Debbie?
We're at 23 minutes.
Okay.
So
I'd like to refer more to the concept of either we antidote or we find a more suitable remedy. Now, this relates to a case that I may have mentioned in the show. It's just it's something that I experienced where a patient was given a remedy dry dose, a young patient, because he was having problems with water in the ears and congestion, and he was given Medirhinum, and he became extremely fearful. And this was going on for years before this particular patient came to me. And there was the debate about whether to antidote or whether to choose a more appropriate remedy. Now, in this particular case, I chose a different remedy, and that helped. But there was another case of a woman who had high blood sugar that wasn't being controlled by medications. And I gave her calcium 6C. I gave her an olfactory dose. And she went into a hysteria of aggravation. I'd never seen anything like that from such a low potency and such a mild form of dosing. It was a few years ago, and I really wasn't quite sure what to do because her sugar was going up, her blood pressure was going up, she was getting palpitations, she was feeling very unwell, and all of this happened immediately after taking the remedy, so I didn't feel I could say, well, maybe it was this, maybe it was that, and I could not find any other reason for this to be happening. So I tried antidoting with coffee. It helped a little. It helped her feel a little bit better. But this aggravation worked its way through for almost a month. I couldn't find a better a better remedy. She wouldn't take another remedy also. And I think she did some reflexology, and that helped her. And the coffee helped her. So it's very, very individual how a patient will react. And there are many surprises, even in the most gentle form of dosing.
One of the questions that a homeopath may come up in their mind as they read this aphorism, when it says that if you have a very violent reaction, then you're supposed to antidote. And so you've given us a hint that you've tried coffee. And I'm wondering in what method and what other kinds of ways we can do this antidoting process. And
thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.